Yeah, you guys are awesome. A plus, I'm leaving. Good job. Like, my work is done. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not really leaving. Thank you. Awesome. Really great answers, you guys. But I want you to know that if you're an active participant in the internet in any way, shape, or form at any time in your existence, you are going to hear the claim that Jesus never existed. And usually people will say, in fact, I just saw this on Facebook within the last year on a thread I was involved in. An atheist came on and said, guys, there is no evidence for the existence of Jesus. Do you want to know why he said that? Because he heard somebody else say it, and then he heard somebody else and somebody else say it, and they heard somebody say it, but guess what? It's not true at all. There is tons of evidence outside the Bible that Jesus actually existed. And all the things we know about Jesus from secular history agree with what the Bible says about him. Do you guys want to know 10 things we can know about Jesus, even if you never opened a Bible? These are 10 historical facts. Now, listen, note takers, I'm going to fly through this. It's going to be too hard to try to write it down, but I'm going to give you a link you can go to where you can get more of this in depth, and all of the sources are footnoted on the source I'm going to give you. So don't try to write this down because I'm going to fly through this pretty quick. But here are 10 things that we can know about Jesus from secular history, from non-Christian history. Okay, ready? Number one. Let's look at these memes. This is what you're going to encounter when you go online. This is a billboard that American Atheists took out, and it says, you know it's a myth. This season, celebrate reason. Catchy. And you know what? I agree with that second line. We need to celebrate reason this season. And if they were to do that, they would realize that Jesus actually did exist and that he's not a myth. There's another nice little meme you'll see on the internet. This is from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. It says, nobody died for your sins. Jesus Christ is a myth. Like, there are people who believe this. You can even buy some Jesus never existed knit socks if your feet get cold. Or you can read a book, okay? So this is a claim that's made. Now, I want to tell you that in the world of scholarship, even atheistic, secular, liberal scholarship, there are not very many scholars that will claim that Jesus never existed because they'd lose credibility. There's really just one guy that's kind of holding out, but the general consensus of scholarship, not just Christian scholarship, atheists, liberals, secularists, they believe Jesus existed as a historical person, okay? But here are 10 things we can know about him just from non-Christian history, okay? Number one, he was known to be wise and virtuous. Number two, he had a brother named James. That's recorded in non-Christian history. He was known to perform miracles. In fact, the interesting thing about that, there was a guy named Celsus, and he was early on in the birth of Christianity, but he was trying to refute Christianity and disprove it. And so he was trying to explain why Jesus was able to do miracles. And he made up the story that Jesus went to Egypt and learned some kind of dark arts and came back and was able to perform these miracles. But what does that tell you? That he did them, because the guy who was trying to refute Christianity was trying to explain why he was able to do them. Now, if you're trying to refute Christianity and Jesus didn't really exist, you'd go after that. Or you'd say, he never performed miracles, but that guy knew, everybody knew he performed miracles. So he was trying to prove why he was able to do stuff like that. Number four, he was crucified under Pontius Pilate. Number five, his crucifixion was accompanied by darkness and an earthquake. There's actually two sources for that outside of the Bible. He had many Jewish and Gentile disciples. He lived during the time of Tiberius Caesar. His disciples believed that he rose from the dead. That's a recorded non-Christian historical fact. Number nine, his disciples believed he was God, and they met regularly to worship him. And number 10, his disciples were willing to suffer and die for their beliefs. Now, most of these facts come not just from non-Christian history, but from people who were actually opposed to Christianity, which gives it more credibility, right? Because it's people who, if they could refute it, if they could establish that Jesus never existed, they would have. But they had to explain certain things. For example, number 9, that was from a Roman history, which was very well documented and recorded, where one guy was trying to explain to the guy above him what the Christians in that area were doing and what should he do about it. So they were going to be punished for it, but he was telling this guy what they were doing. So if you want the sources, I've got all of that footnoted on my blog. And if you go to elisachilders.com, you can look up the blog, 10 Historical Facts About Jesus from Non-Christian Sources. Scroll down to the bottom. You can go on and read all those sources for yourself. It's all available online for free. So Jesus existed, right? Are we all like satisfied that Jesus existed? So let's talk about the resurrection. How do we know that Jesus was actually resurrected from the dead, besides just a feeling we get in our heart or chills down our spine when we sing a worship song? Well, this guy is named Gary Habermas. And you know, I like to use really attractive people on my PowerPoints. He is one of the most foremost scholars on the resurrection of Jesus. And what he did was he collected the most extensive collection of critical scholarly works on the resurrection that were written between the years of 1975 and 2003. He used not just Christian sources, he used ultra-liberal sources, secular sources, anybody who had a specialty and was peer-reviewed and respected in the area of ancient history in the Near East or New Testament or anything like that. He collected all of their works. And he discovered that there are five things that virtually all scholars agree on. Over 90% of all scholars, I'm talking ultra-liberal and ultra-conservative. See, we could take this talk in a lot of different directions. I could give you all the real conservative stuff, and that would be exciting and interesting. But I'm going to pare it down, and I'm just going to give you five things that virtually all scholars agree on. Remember we talked about we assess the evidence and then come to a conclusion. So these five things are what we call minimal facts. These are facts that virtually every scholar agrees upon. He did good work, so he gets some sunglasses there. The first fact is that Jesus died by Roman crucifixion. Now, we are going to accept the Gospels right now as eyewitness testimony for this. Right? We have four different eyewitness accounts. Remember, the Bible isn't just one book, it's a collection of books. And we have four eyewitness accounts of Jesus' resurrection. We have Matthew. Now, Mark may not have been an actual eyewitness, we don't know for sure, but there's good evidence that his gospel is actually Peter's eyewitness account. Okay? Luke was not an eyewitness, but he interviewed eyewitnesses. So what we're reading in Luke's gospel is eyewitnesses. In fact, if you want to just get your mind blown, how do you think he knew Mary's whole song in the beginning of Luke? Go read the first couple chapters of Luke and how detailed the story is of Jesus' birth. How would Luke know that? He interviewed Mary. It's Mary's account. That's why it's so detailed. The mama, she told the story. And then, of course, John was an eyewitness. So we have four accounts in the Gospels. Now, don't get hung up on it being the Bible. If you have an atheist that says, well, I'm not going to accept it because it's the Bible, just say, fine, forget about it being the Bible. Just take it as an eyewitness account. I'm not asking you to believe that it's inerrant or authoritative. Just take it as an eyewitness account to start with. Okay, so the Gospels attest to this. There's a Jewish historian back in the first century who became the official historian of the Roman Empire for the Jews, and his name was Josephus. And he said this, when Pilate, upon hearing him accused by men of the highest standing among us, had condemned him to be crucified. So Josephus, one of the greatest historians in history, is attesting that Jesus was crucified by Roman crucifixion. We also have an account from Tacitus, who was a well-respected historian in the late first, early second century, who testified to this as well. And then Mara Bar Serapion, who was an Assyrian Stoic philosopher, he wrote his son a letter in prison talking about the fact that Jesus died by Roman crucifixion. And then there's a satirist named Lucian of Samosata that he's the one who said, the Christians, you know, worship a man to this day, the distinguished personage who introduced their novel rites and was crucified on that account. So he's talking about Jesus. And then, of course, we have accounts of the Jewish Talmud that also testify that Jesus died by Roman crucifixion. So that's something that virtually all scholars agree upon. In fact, I'm going to give you a quote from a scholar who is so liberal. This guy is not a Christian, okay? He doesn't believe Jesus really was resurrected because he doesn't have faith to believe that. But here's what he says about this fact. That he was crucified is as sure as anything historical can ever be. His name is John Dominic Crossan. He's a well-known, very fringe left very liberal scholar. All right, the second fact we're going to look at that virtually all scholars agree on is that the eyewitnesses of the resurrection believed that they saw the resurrected Jesus and were willing to die for that belief. Now, notice the way this is worded. It's not saying the eyewitnesses of the resurrection saw the resurrected Jesus. An atheist is probably not going to affirm that they actually saw that. They might try to explain like other ways, like this is why they thought they saw it. But they all virtually agree that the eyewitnesses of the resurrection believed that they really saw the resurrected Jesus, and all of them were willing to die for that belief. We know that Paul and Peter were killed in Rome. Paul was beheaded, and Peter was crucified. Because remember, only Roman citizens were beheaded, and only criminals, slaves, and enemies of the state were crucified. And Peter wasn't a Roman citizen. And they were both killed during the persecution of Nero. For a couple of the other disciples, we have pretty strong historical evidence that they were martyred. There's a few we don't know for sure about. There's legends about. But here's the thing. Every single one of them were willing to be tortured and killed for what they saw. Nobody's going to die for what they absolutely know is a lie. But people will die for what they know is the truth. See, we all might die for Jesus because we believe their testimony, but they were the eyewitnesses, and they're not going to give their lives for something they know is a lie. And although we don't know the fate of some of them, there is not one record of any one of them recanting. They all went to their deaths claiming that they had seen this guy raised from the dead. The third fact we're going to look at, Paul the persecutor was converted. Why does that matter? Well, Paul, see, we're talking about eyewitnesses that followed Jesus, disciples that loved him. Someone might say, well, they were biased. They wanted to believe he was raised from the dead. But Paul, he was actively persecuting Christians. He was dragging them out of their houses, having them dragged out and killed for claiming that Christianity was true. See, Christianity was a major threat to the Roman Empire because the Roman Empire was polytheistic. Anybody remember what polytheism was? Yeah. Yeah, many gods. They were perfectly fine for you to worship whatever god you wanted as long as you also, as you kind of paid ultimate homage to Caesar. And so people would have to come through and put a pinch of incense in the little bowl there in worship to Caesar, and the Christians wouldn't do it. So that sounds a lot like sedition and traitors to the Roman Empire because Christians couldn't do that. So they were enemies of the state, and Paul was actively, as a Jew, having them killed. He was actually on his way to get more of them when he had his encounter with the risen Jesus. So the reason it matters that Paul the persecutor was converted is that he was beyond a skeptic. He was way more than a skeptic. He actually believed it was God's will to persecute the Christian church. And his conversion is such a powerful testimony because at the time he met the risen Jesus, he was his enemy. He wasn't wanting to believe that the resurrection was true. So it's one thing for the disciples to claim it, but it's another thing for the church's leading persecutor to claim it. So the fact that Paul believed he saw the risen Christ and was willing to be killed for that belief is attested by an early church father, Clement of Rome, Polycarp, Tertullian, Dionysius of Corinth, and another church father named Origen. And guys, on top of that, even if Paul wasn't beheaded, which he was, we know that historically, he was willing to be stoned, left for dead, shipwrecked, beaten with rods 3 times, whipped with 39 lashes 5 times, attacked by an angry mob, bitten by a viper, and starved. And that's not even to mention the thorn in the flesh he said he had, and he called a messenger of Satan. So here's a guy that hates Christians. He's trying to kill them all. He meets Jesus, and all of a sudden, he's willing to get shipwrecked, beaten, and starved, maintaining the claim that he made. That's strong evidence. The fourth fact, James the skeptic was converted. Now, why do you think that matters? James was Jesus' brother. Now, who has a brother or sister in this room? Like, are there any? All right, who's like sisters or? Okay, you two. Okay, so like your sisters, right? And somebody starts claiming she's God incarnate. She laughs, right? your own brother, I mean, a prophet is without honor in his own country. She's laughing. She's like, that's my sister. I don't believe it. And James was a skeptic. It's well attested in the Gospels that he was with the family when they thought Jesus was crazy. They were trying to seize him and take him away from the crowd because they literally said he's out of his mind. His own family said that about Jesus. James was extremely skeptical about Jesus being God and all of this claims that everybody was making. But we know from 1 Corinthians 15 that James saw the risen Jesus also. And so you read about James being a skeptic, and the next thing you know, he meets the risen Jesus and he's the leader of the church in Jerusalem. I mean, it would take a lot to believe that your own brother is who all these people are saying he is and who he said he was. It's just interesting. He goes from being skeptical, thinking Jesus is crazy, to meeting him risen from the dead, and next time we see him, he's the leader of the church in Jerusalem. It's powerful evidence. Number five, the tomb was empty. Now, this is not attested by 90% of scholars. This is more like 75%. Still very strong number that still most scholars believe that the tomb was found empty. So how do we know that? There's even verses in the eyewitness accounts that talk about them trying to explain. They made up the charge that the disciples stole the body, right? Remember that? Well, why would they do that? If the body wasn't there. They wouldn't have come up with that story if the body was still in the tomb. It affirms that the tomb was empty, and most scholars agree that it was. Now, again, the atheist scholars, the agnostic scholars are going to have different explanations as to why that is. So let's talk about let's recap the facts. So number one, and these are the facts that most scholars agree with. Number one, Jesus died by Roman crucifixion. Number two, the eyewitnesses of the resurrection believed that they saw the resurrected Jesus and were willing to die for that belief. Number three, Paul the persecutor was converted. Number four, James the skeptic was converted. And number five, the tomb was empty. So how can we explain all of these facts, right? They have to be explained some way. Don't stare at that too long. You might actually get vertigo or something. And these are some ways that some scholars try to explain the minimal facts, that maybe they hallucinated it, right? It's possible. They loved Jesus. They didn't want to believe he had died. So they hallucinated it. Well, that can't be true because hallucinations happen to individual people, right? There has never been in the history of the world a group hallucination where everybody hallucinated the same thing. And we know that there were over 500 witnesses of the resurrected Jesus. So you're going to tell me that 500 people all said they saw the resurrected Jesus, that they all hallucinated the exact same thing? Because listen, guys, when the Gospels were being written, the eyewitnesses were all still alive. I mean, maybe not all of them, but it was written close enough to the time that eyewitnesses were still alive. And there's no record of anybody ever saying, hey, that's not true. I was there, and I didn't see what you said. Not even the people that were trying to refute Christianity. So you can't convince me that 500 people all experienced the exact same hallucination. Number two, maybe they went to the wrong tomb. People say this. Well, if they had gone to the wrong one, what would happen? The Jewish authorities would have gone to the right one, dug up the body, and paraded it around town, right? I mean, if the disciples, if they went to the wrong tomb, they're like, the tomb is empty. You know, the Jews would have been like, no, here it is. Here's his body. They would have gone to it wouldn't be that hard to find out which tomb he was put in. So, you know, you can't, and even if they did go to the wrong tomb, that doesn't explain all 12 of Jesus' appearances after his resurrection. There are 12 accounts of Jesus appearing to people after his resurrection. So even if they went to the wrong tomb, how do you explain that, right? So this one fails for me. Maybe Jesus just fainted or appeared to be dead. Please tell me you know that reference. How many of you know that? Your friend here is only mostly dead, mostly dead, is slightly alive. This is called the swoon theory, that Jesus just fainted or only appeared to be dead. But okay, so let's look at this. But friends and enemies believed he was dead. In fact, we know the Roman soldiers didn't break his legs. Why did they break legs at crucifixion? To hurry it along, right? Well, they didn't do that because he was dead. These are professional executioners. This is their only job, is to crucify people on crosses. They know if people are dead or if they're not dead. That's their job. Jesus was embalmed with 75 pounds of bandages and spices. So you're telling me that he could survive 3 days in a tomb with the injuries he sustained, somehow unwrapped himself, moved a 2-ton rock, got by the elite Roman guards after suffering that kind of injury. Now, you want to talk impossible? That's impossible. And then, of course, that doesn't explain Paul's experience of meeting Jesus on the road to Damascus, which was a little bit of a different type of experience than the others had. Another one is maybe the disciples stole the body. Well, again, they wouldn't have died for what they knew was a lie. If they stole the body and were making up the story, the minute they were starting to be persecuted, tortured, threatened with death, their families threatened with death, they would have been like, never mind, we stole it, here it is. We made it up. There's no way. And if they stole the body, who appeared to them those 12 times? Again, it doesn't explain the 12 appearances of Jesus. And also, we have the admission from the Jewish authorities that the tomb was actually empty. So this wouldn't explain that. So another possible explanation is that maybe that somebody that looked like Jesus died in his place. And this is actually what Muslims believe. If you talk to a Muslim about Jesus, they will tell you he's a prophet. They'll tell you he's coming again. They have high respect for Jesus. But if you tell them Jesus died on the cross, they would say, no, he did not. He did not die on the cross. So they believe that somebody that just looked like Jesus, or maybe Allah changed the face to look like Jesus, but basically that a substitute took his place on the cross. But here's what we have to remember. His mama was right there with him the whole time. See, the disciples, they ran, but his mom, Mary, Magdalene, they stayed. They were there, right there. You can't tell me that you could fool his own mom. So this one fails for me too. And if Jesus wasn't really killed, then how did the guy who died leave the tomb? Did he unwrap 75 pounds of spices and fight off the guards and move a 2-ton rock by himself? And was everyone in the first century wrong about absolutely everything? Well, the sixth possible explanation is that Jesus actually did rise from the dead. In my view, that's the only rational conclusion. None of the other ones make any sense. If these five facts are true, which the majority of scholars believe they are, the only reasonable conclusion is that Jesus actually rose from the dead. Let's talk about what some scholars have said about this evidence, okay? So the first one is the historian Gary Habermas. We met him earlier. He said this: perhaps no fact is more widely recognized than that early Christian believers had real experiences that they thought were appearances of the risen Jesus. A critic may claim that what they saw were hallucinations or visions, but he does not deny that they actually experienced something. There is a virtual consensus among scholars who study Jesus' resurrection that subsequent to Jesus' death by crucifixion, his disciples really believed that he appeared to them risen from the dead. Here's what an atheist has to say. This guy's name is Gerd Ludemann, and he's a German New Testament scholar and historian. He's an atheist, very well-respected guy. Here's what he says. It may be taken as historically certain that Peter and the disciples had experiences after Jesus' death in which Jesus appeared to them as the risen Christ. That's an atheist saying. There's nowhere else the evidence can go. Now, why is he an atheist? Well, there's a difference between belief that something happened and belief in the person of Jesus, right? He's not taking that step, but he's saying, I don't know what else to tell you about the evidence, but it really, I don't know how to explain it, but that's what it says. skeptic. This is Bart Ehrman. We mentioned him a couple weeks ago. He's an agnostic. What's agnostic? Someone who doesn't know. He used to be a Christian. He was raised Christian, went to youth group like you guys, and discovered what he believed were contradictions in the Gospels, and he deconverted from Christianity and now lives and breathes to try to deconvert all of you. He teaches at North Carolina in Chapel Hill. So he's the distinguished professor of religious studies at North Carolina Chapel Hill, one of the most respected scholars in the field of New Testament studies. And so about all of this evidence, here's what he said. Historians, of course, have no difficulty speaking about the belief in the resurrection of Jesus, since this is a matter of public record. It is a historical fact that some of Jesus' followers came to believe that he had been raised from the dead soon after his execution. And then there's a theologian that pretty much everybody respects, liberals and conservatives, a guy named N.T. Wright. He's one of the leading New Testament scholars and historians and theologians, and here's what he said. As a historian, I cannot explain the rise of early Christianity unless Jesus rose again, leaving an empty tomb behind him. How would Christianity have even gotten off the ground if Jesus didn't raise from the dead? It would have fizzled out. But the eyewitnesses maintained what they saw, and they never let go of it. The ex-con. How many of you remember or have read about in history class the Watergate scandal? Okay, just a few. So back in the 70s, President Nixon was embroiled in this controversy. Well, it's more than a controversy. It was called Watergate. And there was a guy that went to prison because they called him actually his hatchet man. He was like his secondhand man that committed a lot of crimes. And he went to prison, and he became a Christian in prison. And part of what convicted him was that he and his coworkers and what they were committing the crime had agreed that they were going to stick to the same story to try to get out of being convicted. And so here's what he has to say about the resurrection. I know the resurrection is a fact, and Watergate proved it to me. How? Because 12 men testified they had seen Jesus raised from the dead. Then they proclaimed that truth for 40 years, never once denying it. Everyone was beaten, tortured, stoned, and put in prison. They would not have endured that if it weren't true. Watergate embroiled 12 of the most powerful men in the world, and they couldn't keep alive for 3 weeks. That's why he's convinced. You're telling me 12 apostles could keep a lie for 40 years? Absolutely impossible. Coming from a man who knows from experience how that all works. So here we are. We're at the point now where it's your turn to analyze the evidence. I can sit up here and try to convince you week after week after week after week of what I believe. But ultimately, it comes down to what you believe. And you may think, well, I'm not qualified to make that decision. I'm not qualified to analyze evidence like that. Let me tell you why you are. Think about how the American court system works. If someone's convicted of accused of a crime, something big like murder, they go and they're given a trial, right? And in the trial, expert witnesses are brought forward. That would be like our scholars. The expert witnesses say, no, this is, okay, so this is what this means, and this is what that means, and eyewitnesses will come forward and testify, but who decides the verdict? The jury. Are the jury experts? No. Are the jury the eyewitnesses? No, it's a jury of what? Peers. So you guys, with all this evidence, you're the jury. You decide for yourself. I know what I believe. I'm confident in what I believe. But the question goes to you now. What do you believe? So there's a story in the New Testament. You all know the story of Lazarus. Lazarus had died. And by the time Jesus got there, he'd been dead 4 days in his grave. In fact, it even says in the King James, he stinketh. He had already started to stink, to rot and to stink. In fact, that's the famous story where Jesus wept. It's a great story. You should go home and read it tonight. But Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, and Lazarus's sister Martha was there. And she said to Jesus, if you would have been here, this wouldn't have happened. and she was grieving. And this is what Jesus said to Martha. He said, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? He asked Martha, do you believe this? And it's a question he asks you, and he asks me. Do you believe this? I am the resurrection. I am the life. Whoever believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? Because see, the Bible says, if you believe in your heart and confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. That's the gospel, guys. All comes down to the resurrection. If you believe in your heart and you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. And Jesus will ask of you this tonight. We're going to break up into some small groups and talk about this question. And I'm just going to read this again as we come up to end. And this is what Jesus said to Martha. I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. So I ask you, do you believe this?
Guys, is, and I'm okay, we're going to mess some chairs up in here, we'll fix it, okay? But where are my leaders, my youth leaders, Jenny, Donna, can you guys stand up for me, please? I need to see who's in the room, and then we're going to divide you up. So, where are my high school girls? Will you stand up for me, please? All right, and things are about to get a little bit messy here. So, Donna and Miss Jenny, I want you to take the high school girls, and I want you to basically break into two groups. And I don't care what those groups look like, but let's kind of break them up equally. So if you guys can walk towards where Miss Donna and Miss Jenny are, let's get you broken up. Circle some chairs. This may mean some of you are going to have to move in order to allow them to do this. And Mr. Guy, if you'll come down here for me, please. And Nate, where are my high school guys? Stand up for me. I got a good group of you guys as well. Is Gus here? Okay, Gus and Guy, I want the high school guys to come on down here. I want you to divide them into two groups for me, please, and then break them up, okay? And we're trying to do this quickly because we want to have as much time as possible. And where are my middle school girls? If you'll stand up for me. I've got Miss Sarah, and am I missing a leader standing up somewhere? There you are. Thanks, Linda. Okay. So I'm going to get you guys to, it looks like we got a 6 of you. Is that right? So let's keep the 6 of you together and with Miss Linda and Miss Sarah and grab a circle somewhere. And if I've missed some, if there's about 8, then break them into 2 groups of 4. Okay. And where are my middle school guys? Stand up for me. And you guys are rambunctious. You're getting broken into 2 groups for sure. Okay. So we got Mr. Jace and we got Mr. Kevin. And I want you to head over there for me, please, and break into 2 groups. Get your, and Gus, take a group and get some chairs separated into a circle. And okay. This group here, way too big. There's no way there's going to be conversation in this group. So, you just got a battlefield promotion, Miss Michelle. Come here. All right. I want you to take 4 out of this group and 2 out of this group, and you're going to make a group over here. So, Miss Jenny, send 4 of them this way, and Miss Donna, send a couple over this way with Miss Michelle. All right. Break that group in 2, and I don't care how you guys, but let's just grab some space. Lydia, I need you to find a group. I know your thigh's hurting, but I'm going to get you to come down and find your group for me, please. So let's grab one of these groups, okay? Okay.